So you're with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 99. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about the series finale of Star Wars Rebels. So be careful, there's a lot of spoilers in this episode. As always, I am Mikey B, and I'm joined by my co-host this week, of Evan from the Johto Cast. Hey, Evan.
Hey, Mikey. How are you?
Welcome back, Evan. Excited to see you here. Or hear you.
Thank you.
And we also have Dano from the Dano Channel. Hey, Dano.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
Welcome back. It's been a while.
It has been a while. Glad to be back.
Right before our big 100th episode, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Perfect.
I know, just right in time. If you want to get involved in the conversation, you guys can get a hold of us on Twitter at Our Radio Podcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook page. Send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free, including the novelization of The Last Jedi. Has anyone read that yet or listened to it?
No.
Not yet.
I will say this, and I'll be honest, it's a spoiler here, but the very first, I guess it's the prologue, it's not even chapter one, totally listening to it, you know, with The Last Jedi, and it freaked me out because Luke Skywalker is married. Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
I'm not joking. Like, it's like, yeah, like, wow. It's really like, I will say, I'm about, probably got about an hour and a half left, so I'm mostly through it. I also have the Kindle book version, so I might kind of jump between reading at night and listening out as I drive. But I will say this, I love the novelization of it. It does a really good job of kind of filling in some of the plot holes that people are kind of complaining about. And also, it gives you a little bit of a different perspective. I also love the Force Awakens novelization, but I think I like this one a lot more. So definitely
check it out.
There's
a lot more Snoke.
There
is that right?
Yeah, there is more. There's a lot more of everything that you would expect. Obviously, because you get like the internal monologues. So it really brings some things out. So I'm a fan of it. I think just because like. I don't know. Plus, it gets me excited to be able to bring home the movie next week and watch it for the bajillionth time, right? As always, if you want to support the Resistance, you can join us on Patreon. Check us out at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. We have some perks like joining us on our Discord chat, listen live in our recording studio, hear all the mistakes we make, movie nights if I can get all my other co-hosts on board at some point in time, busy lives, and obviously After Dark episodes. Plus, you have the opportunity to join us live on a show at some point. If you can't afford to support us via Patreon, that's okay. We do have merchandise for sale, t-shirts and button packs available on our website. But guess what, guys? With our 100th episode, we have a 100th episode giveaway where you have a chance to win one of those t-shirts or button packs. Check out resistanceradio.net for more details, but simply go ahead and join that giveaway. Tweet at us your favorite moments from the last 99 episodes, including this episode. And if we use yours, we will choose a winner randomly. And if we use yours on the show, you may be getting a button pack or a t-shirt.
I think I'm going to be cool. Tweeting at you all of my favorite moments that I was on the show.
I was on the show and I talked about, you know, Rogue One.
Yeah.
Hey, I like
actually,
that.
I did say that my favorite was having all of us on for the big roundtable following Force Awakens.
Those were all good. Like, seriously, those were all good. So I'm happy with all those, which will probably make them on the show. Anyway, time for the news. So we have a couple different news things, not a lot, but one of my favorite news pieces, we have seen, I guess a Last Jedi deleted scene has been premiered on the Star Wars show, but one of my favorite things about the scene, besides the fact that it really brings into Phasma's character a little bit more, and you'll all see this when it comes out on your ticket at home, but Finn makes a reference to another character that we've never seen on screen. Captain Phasma ain't nothing but a whoop hog. So I like this idea that someone wrote an article about this, because we have Womp Rats, we have Gundarks, we have, you know, Nerf Herders, and all these different things. And even, was it Mook? A moof was a moof milker from The Force Awakens that Han Solo said. So all these animals that we just don't know. And obviously we got one more in the deleted scene with Finn. And so I'm sure this is something that was maybe around on Starkiller Base. The woof hog, I guess. You know, I don't know. What do you guys think about this? Or what do you think of the deleted scene also?
I really liked it. I'm glad that, like, I'm glad we get it. Because I know that we don't always get every deleted scene. I feel like they could have left that in. It wasn't that long. But I don't feel like it killed, like, pacing. It would have made people feel a lot better about Phasma, I feel.
Yeah, like, the thing is, I think it made Finn too much. Because Finn is the one who ended up taking Phasma out completely at the end. And I think it also kind of made Phasma a little bit more of a cold-blooded killer. Which, that's how she's portrayed in both the comics and the book. So I think it actually just portrayed Phasma more as her character a little bit more.
Yeah, it definitely improved her.
Yeah, definitely. I think it did. But at the same time, I can see why they would take it out. Especially, again, Star Wars, you know, is designed for everybody. And, you know, when you have little kids dressing up as Phasma, like Darth Vader, like, yes, he chokes people. But, like, it was always kind of like a little bit off screen, like he wasn't there. This is like close up of the blaster, boom, 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 and she kills like five or something. Like, it's like kind of cold blooded murder. I get why they may have cut it. At least in my mind, like, that would be the reason why. But I do like, you know, I do like that we had that scene there just for posterity for those people who would want to, you know, follow up with it. Evan, what did you think about it?
I thought it was a good scene. I think the fact that it looked kind of unfinished made it, you know, just in this deleted scene form, made it seem a little less, if that makes any sense. But the performances looked great. The shots looked great. I guess I would have liked that every bit as much as what we got. And yeah, it fleshes out a lot more. So I'm not sure why they wouldn't have wanted to stick with this, but I think we all know, this is my, you know, I think we're all of the opinion, she's not dead. She's coming back.
I think she's going to come back. I agree 100% on that. Yeah, oh, yeah. She'll be back. Phasma's going to be like, you know, one of the horror film, you know, murderers or something like that. That just, you think she's dead. Nope. She just keeps coming back. She's a survivor. We get this in the books. We get this in the comics. So she'll be back.
Whether she just needs a new excuse for how she got away this time. She's going to run out pretty soon.
Although I will say, I think I like the Womp Hog a little bit better. You know, squealed like a Womp Hog better than Chrome Dome. I will say, I think like that insult is better than Chrome Dome. But that's just me. Maybe that's just me. I don't know.
No, it's much more Star Wars.
No, it is.
Okay. I just want to make sure that everyone, the people, kind of agree with me on this one. But anyway, guess who is getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame?
You.
No, not me, but Mark Hamill. No. We all know this. Mark is getting his star, which is probably long overdue. You know, he's not, obviously we know him as Luke Skywalker, but he's done lots and lots of voice acting, I think, over the years, especially probably most mostly known for The Joker. But he's even been TV appearances, even on the most recent season of The Flash, I believe. So, you know, he's all over the place doing lots of different things, everything from Wing Commander and so on. But there was a great little skit with him and Jimmy Kimmel. And I will tell you this, I thought it was delightful just seeing Mark Hamill kind of hunched over, working on the Hollywood Walk of Fame with a jackhammer. Did you guys get a chance to see this at all?
Pulled up right now, actually. Of it.
So
that's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, so basically, for those of you who have not seen the Jimmy Kimmel clip, it'll be linked to on our website, but it is definitely one of those things where he is actually jackhammering Jimmy Kimmel's star to make room for his own. Because, you know, Hollywood is not big enough for everybody. But, you know, he does use his favorite, you know, his full force trick. This is not the star you're looking for. All those fun things on it. And he's just delightfully happy. It's Mark Hamill. Who can never say a bad thing about Mark? I don't know. I love the guy. John Boyega has gone on record with, was it Slash Film, I believe, to say who he thinks Finn should end up with. Which I thought was interesting. No. So basically, there's a conversation. Apparently, there is, I'll be 100% honest. I didn't realize this. So obviously, there's the short list of people think Finn should end up with in Episode 9 is Rose, Rey, or, you know, Poe.
Those are probably the big three. But apparently, okay. there's also people who really want him to end up with Chewbacca. That's what John has said himself. So you know, that's what he says. You know, or Chewbacca or anyone. You know, he says you guys are going savage. Apparently, is his direct quote. But he said, but because Finn is the one character for me who is in a distinct, unique relationship with everybody, he has had this kind of banterous relationship with Han. Then he has this loving relationship with Rey. Now with Rose, it feels like he has a great relationship. Personally, Boyega would like to see Finn end up with Rey. And you know, it'd be interesting. I'd be okay with that just because of like from holding hands on the Jakku desert to, you know, her being worried about him being slashed on the back. Although I will say I did like Rose as a character, so I'm okay with Finn ending up with anybody. I don't know. What do you guys think about this?
Yeah, I think the Finn Rey thing is more of a brother sister kind of love.
Okay.
There's love there for sure, but it's more of like a brother sister kind of thing. And with Rose, I like Rose actually. I like Rose a lot, but I don't know that they're I don't know that I feel like they're a good fit.
I don't know. She did save him from, you know.
She did.
Very Poe-esque. I would say he learned a lot from Poe and decided to sacrifice himself. But Rose saved him from that. So I don't know. I think Rose is a good fit for him. But at the same time, you know, I know people have been asking about Poe, and I think Poe has grown a lot too. So I think it's completely up in the air. I don't think there could be anything that John Boyega or Finn's character would end up with, but I definitely think right now, just because if we take the original trilogy or even the prequel trilogy, there's that kiss in the second episode in both trilogies, and that's who they end up with by the last one. So you got Anakin and Padme kissing at the end of Attack of the Clones, and then you got Han and Leia kissing in the Empire Strikes Back. So I'm going to say probably he's going to end up with Rose, but that's just my idea.
I think you're probably right. I think they're probably setting it up for that. Although I really, really want to see a lot more stories set in this time frame so that we can see him continue to grow. Because if he just fell in love with the first person that treated him like a person, whether that's Poe or Rey, it's, you know, a little bit, maybe not the best thing for his character, maybe to have someone else who isn't his immediate first exposure to actual people that aren't evil. Maybe that that's a better route to
aren't,
go.
Aren't brainwashed out of the First Order? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So this next bit of news, I will say, it comes from Dave Filoni. But it is also a spoiler, so I'm going to put this out there. If you have not seen Rebels and have not seen the end of Rebels, pause for like 2 minutes or put your take your headphones off for like 2 minutes. We got to talk about this. So Dave Filoni has said a character that was mentioned, not seen, but mentioned in the season finale of Rebels is not gone, is not dead. He may have gotten cut off from the mic, or I guess the comm. Is in Star Wars, right? But Grand Admiral Thrawn contacts Captain Pelion, Captain Gilead Pelion, who, if you have read Legends, Pelion, oh man, Pelion was everywhere, from the Thrawn books to, you know, New Jedi Order to he was, what was the series after when Jason turned
Legacy of the Force.
Legacy of the Force. He was in all of it. And he was the leader of the remnant of the Empire in the extended universe, in the old Legacy novels. So I will say, having just the name, Captain Pelion, like, it made me really excited. Like, I looked at my wife, and she looked at me, because we both knew, we had read this stuff. And then as soon as I saw that Filoni had said, oh no, he's not done, he just got cut off, it made me so excited. Plus, yeah. it really also made me excited when him on the walk, he's like, sir, they came out of hyperspace. And I said it, I was like, it's going to be the whales. It's going to be the Purgles. It's the whales that are coming back. And my wife's like, I doubt that. But of course, they brought it full circle.
Yeah, I thought so too.
I was so excited. Like, honestly, I will say, this is probably one of the best things to know, that he's not dead, he's back. And I think, you know what, they made a joke about more EU characters coming. This is definitely one of the EU characters that I know people really, really had a you know, I had, like I said, me and you, Evan, we both were super excited about this just because he became a Grand Admiral also. You know, Pelion was sure pretty, he was pretty awesome in that in the story arc. So I'm excited to see where he gets to go.
Yeah, because I think we were kind of worried that Thrawn's buddy from the novel was kind of replacing Captain Pelion, and I guess not. Now he's got two bros.
Yeah, we were worried about that, and I can only see what else is happening. Now, the last bit of news we have before we jump into Rebels. I know we're moving through the news fast, but guess what? Rebels is just Rebels, right? Jon Favreau, to executive produce and write live-action Star Wars series. Now, let's take I want to take this in pieces, because this is really, really interesting. So, one, this is a live-action series, so it's not a movie. It is a series for Disney's direct-to-consumer streaming service. So this means this is going to be a live-action series. My wife's first comment to me was Ahsoka and Sabine series, which I'm okay with. But anyway, it's going to be a live-action series, which is really cool. The nice part about this is he's going to executive produce and write. Doesn't mean he's writing every episode, but that means he's going to kind of help story arc everything, which would be, it'd be really nice to see Dave Filoni come back to direct some. I would love for Disney to go ahead and really put in a bunch of different directors to allow a lot more directors have a chance at Star Wars for this. But personally, I love Favreau. Everything from, it might be that, you know, the main character in Swingers is called Mikey, and that's my name too. And he says he's money, so I like to think that maybe that's me too. But I like this. So what do you guys think about this? Like, just gut reaction.
I'm all for it. You know, I wasn't sure what they were going to do with the live action series, and I didn't know who they were going to put in to do it. I'm still a little uncomfortable with the live action series because I don't want it to be like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or anything, where it feels very TV showy. That worries me a little bit.
With the live action series, I was hoping it was going to be, actually, I'll be honest with you, I was hoping it was going to be Joss Whedon. And I know
that would be good.
Firefly. Like, that's all I can say is Firefly.
Yeah.
Yeah, like yeah, but see, imagine a live action Lando series produced by Joss Whedon. It would be literally Firefly, but with Lando Calrissian. Like, can we not just say like how awesome that would be? But I will say this, you know, it is a very safe choice. It's a very safe choice. You know, I'll tell you guys this. Danya is actually asleep right now because, you know, Danya's response was, it's another white guy. And I get it. I really do. But at the same time, it is a safe choice. It's an expensive property. But I will say this. I'm excited to see where this goes. Because again, he's not directing. He's just producing. Mm-hmm. And we don't have any words on who will direct some of the episodes.
Yeah, so. If he's going to operate primarily as a showrunner, I think that's going to be pretty good, and especially if they can have a writer's room that is diverse and smart and not just the same old people again. And when I say the same old people, I mean same old white guys. And more directors. I mean, look at Jessica Jones. We've got a whole season of all female directors, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I'll be honest with you. I have a weird feeling that this TV series is set up to bring in. Well, you have to remember also, like Jessica Jones. I don't know if Favreau has any relation with those directors or the showrunners, but I know he knows the entire Marvel Studio movie cast, directors, producers really well because he is an executive producer for the entire story arc of everything on all those. I wouldn't be surprised if he brings in like Ryan Coogler from, you know, Black Panther and everyone else from those movies to just do one episodes and like just start to get stuff that is safe. You know what I mean? Like stuff that is safe for this. And then they can start branching out to other directors, both male, female, people of color. And like, I'm just excited to see what they're going to do. But again, Favreau has made some really great stuff. So I'm okay with it. Like I said, like, you know, he has a really strong relationship with Disney, starting off Iron Man and the Avenger films, and he also did The Jungle Book, and he's also doing The Lion King. So,
And Chef. Don't forget about Chef. That was a great movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Chef was amazing.
Yeah.
Man, those really those Cubans were good. You know what? Just on a side note about Jon Favreau and the movie Chef, which we all like.
I thought you were going to say a side note about Cuban sandwiches.
I am about the Cubanos, right?
Oh, okay.
Arby's sells Cubanos right now. I'm like, what? They're Arby's quality, which is not bad, okay. but it's not there. But it was something. I was driving home, I'm gonna say what? Anyway, and maybe
I should go get one.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, okay. So I'm excited for this. That's just, you know, I'll tell you this though. We do have a lot of Star Wars coming up. A lot of things have been announced, but you know, I will tell you this. We talked about it last week. Me and Ben did. That there really isn't anything announced after next year, 2019, coming out anytime soon. You know, there's been nothing set for Star Wars to release in 2020.
Yeah, you're right. Nothing official, huh? We'll probably find out after Solo comes out, right?
Well, and that's what's interesting. There was an article released about how Disney wants to do a fake starvation of Star Wars for 2 years. And because they just announced all their movies up until 2022. And if you think about this, like, maybe a Star Wars animated series will take place in between 2019 and 2022. The live action one might start up, maybe, because, you know, he doesn't finish Lion King till 2019, right? So maybe 2020, maybe 2021, and then we'll get another Star Wars movie, because we know about an unnamed a Star Wars story film. We know about two new trilogies, and we now know about this live action series, and we also know about something called Star Wars Resistance, but nothing, no dates. So I do find it interesting that they're announcing a lot more of these things, but not giving us any hard dates for anything. So it might be a couple years off before we get this. We'll just have to wait and see.
Maybe that's going to be good for maybe not having to go through a who's who of directors and various people before a show or movie comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they will be even more liberal with, like, these guys aren't working, and by these guys, in my head, I'm imagining the Game of Thrones guys. Maybe they'll find they don't like them, and then nothing too much has been made, and they can move on with somebody else.
Yep.
Yeah, that makes sense.
We'll just have to wait and see. Like, again, they did announce, remember, they announced a Boba Fett movie with Josh Trank. They fired, what, four directors?
Mm-hmm. Something like that.
Josh Trank for the Boba Fett movie that never got made. That was done in 2014. They did the two for the Solo film. And did they do anyone else?
And then for episode 9.
Yeah, episode 9, Colin Trevorrow. So yeah, so that's four directors that they canned. So and only two of them were in the middle of actually making a movie, and then they brought someone else in. So
that was a 2-for-1 deal though.
Yeah, well, that's a 50% chance of, you know, fixing it before something happens. Anyway, it is time for our spotlight topic. Star Wars Rebels, the series. The series finale. The post epilogue. First of all, let's just take before we dive into any of it. What did you guys think of the finale?
I loved it. It was peaceful. Like, everything, they wrapped it up right. You know, there's no disappointment for me at all. I think they handled everything differently than I would have, for sure. I thought everybody was going to die. Spoiler alert, they didn't. But I think it was really great. I loved it. I just felt good after watching it. And I didn't cry the whole time, which is I expected to.
Well, I did cry through most of it.
There was,
but I was glad that we actually got an ending this time as opposed to last time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will say this. Compared to Clone Wars, I am very happy that we got a series finale. Like, it actually ended the way I want. I also don't like the way it ended because it left too much unsaid. You know, it left me going like, well, what's next? You haven't told me what's going to be coming. Do I have to wait 2 years? Do I have to wait a year? Anyway, but yes, I do like the way the story went. I like how it wrapped everything up. I really was excited to see Ezra's growth by the season finale. It was one of those things that made me smile. I also liked how the way it ended didn't make you conflict too much with the original trilogy, with the lack of additional Jedi besides Luke. I don't know if you guys saw how they wrapped that up and everything, but that is something that made me really happy that we saw that some of those characters survived. So I was happy to it. So let's go ahead and let's, before we get into the two episodes, we didn't talk about the episodes before, which kind of showed us why Lothal was so important. And it also shows us when, you know, Ezra was captured and he's presented with the hologram of the Emperor, there's still the temptation about opening up the doorway on Lothal. So, first of all, what do you think about the implications that the Emperor or Palpatine knew about the doorway between worlds? What do you think about this, Evan?
Just the fact that he was aware of it.
Aware of it, trying to get into it.
As far as just trying to control it, I mean, control is his thing. It's more than reasonable that he would have spent as long as he's known about it trying to get access to it and control it. I'm glad they didn't do this sooner, because then they would have felt compelled to explain it even more, and I'm glad that it's not real explainable and that they didn't have much time to feel compelled to do that. It's better as a thing that is hard to describe.
Dana, what you think?
No, I agree. That's actually the best way to put it. Because if they would have put this out any sooner, it would have been too much. Everyone would have just been like, oh, time travel exists now. I mean, it's still a thing. Time travel now exists in Star Wars. But the fact that the Emperor was looking for it and knew about it and was actively trying to get in there, and it's very Emperor, it's very in character. It's just kind of funny that it was a thing that was touched on, and then I just wonder if it's going to come back. Are we going to see that come back? Like, we kind of have to now, don't we?
Well, and that's what I find is interesting, is whether we see it come back or not, is what I love about this is this actually made Jakku and Lothal see why we had such focal points on these stories around it. Because remember, in Empire's End and the Aftermath series, we see why Jakku was so important, which we saw in The Force Awakens and so on. But we also now see why Lothal is so important. And I can only imagine how many other Jedi Force artifacts, temples are out there that we haven't explored that, you know, the story group has just plans for. Especially when they talked about bringing back some other legacy characters from everyone wants to bring back Revan and stuff like that. But like, what else could be out there that would tell some of those stories? So I think seeing this, you know, the World Between Worlds episode and walking in between this kind of nowhere place where everything is. One, I loved hearing all the voices of Luke and
that was the best. Yeah. Did you watch it with subtitles on?
I tried.
Oh yeah,
that's the only way to watch that episode is with subtitles on.
Yeah, I watched it once, and then I went back and I turned the subtitles on because it was really amazing to see all the you know,
even
all
Maz. Places. There was even some quotes from Maz in there, like
The really nice part, and you have to remember, Maz's quotes would be from the future, so it was kind of a doorway in between the past, the future, the present. And I love that they brought back the Mortis gods, you know, what they refer to as Mortis gods, but the dark and the light and everything, and how that all ties into the you know, Anakin and Luke's story of the Chosen One, if you will. So I really enjoyed that because this really set us up for Ezra becoming the leader that he is in these last two episodes. And obviously knowing that Ahsoka survived, but we didn't know what happened to her.
So he did alter the timeline, right? By pulling her out.
Was that always meant to be? Because we never saw Ahsoka and she just like time jumped, you know? Like think about it. Like if she never died there, we never found out she died. Right? We never found out she died. Correct. And if he always pulled her out, like in that point in time, he was destined to be there at some point. Like that becomes, that's the problem with time travel, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it's like, you know, it's a paradox that can happen. It's like, was he always there to save her? And from Vader's perspective, she must have died, right? So there was no reason for anyone to go looking for a body or anything.
Yeah, it's not like, because we saw Vader walk out of the temple, and he didn't, like, you know, clap the dirt off his hands and hands on the hip and go, well, that was really weird. She just disappeared.
Yeah, so...
He just walked off. We don't know.
Never knew. So maybe she always time jumped into the world between worlds with him and so on. You know, we just don't know.
Great. You know what? Another thing in that world, I'm actually watching it right now on my other screen. There aren't a whole lot of doorways.
Well, yeah, so, and I found that interesting that there's not a whole lot of doorways, but there's
that we can see also.
Yeah, there's not less than a whole lot of doorways you can see, but there's enough doorways that you can see that there's different points in time and stuff like that that are there, and it's interesting to think about, like, what points would create those doorways, or what points would have those doorways, or if the Emperor, who is actively trying to communicate and get Ezra and Ahsoka to pull him through, even both times, you know, in the series finale and in the previous episodes, he was trying to get into those doorways to be able to control time and space, if you will.
Now, did you see that part where she entered where she entered that triangle?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
At the very, where she did, that was from that shirt. The second I saw that I was like, my God, that's the Ahsoka shirt. What, like, how long, that shirt's been out for years, hasn't it?
Since the season 2 finale, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's kind of funny they used that exact image as the last time we saw Ahsoka up until the very last episode, but that was really cool. Like, the second I saw it, I was like, wow, it's from the shirt. And now I need to track down that shirt.
And find it again. Anyway. Yeah. Let's go ahead and I do want to talk about Dave Filoni's response. Well, we'll get to this. I put this as B. We'll do this at the very end. So Dave Filoni responded to a live viewing of the show, of the season finale, and a fan asked a question about what happens after. So we'll get to that at the end here. But let's talk about A Fool's Hope. So, what did you guys think of Ryder's betrayal? Did you believe it at first, or no?
I figured that it was going to be a red herring, but the cinematography and the how they blocked the scenes were done perfectly to fool me, to make me reconsider, like, this is for real.
Yep.
Yeah, I will say this. Ryder's betrayal kind of freaked me out a little bit, because I thought it was like, oh, this is part of the plan. But then they were attacked before they kind of were ready for it. And then the troopers kind of let Ryder kind of go. I was like, wait, like, he's not really helping them at all? And he's just kind of hiding back? Like, I first thought it was part of the plan, but then I kind of, like you said, the blocking and everything really made me believe it, which I guess is what you'd want, especially because... I wonder if this plan would have worked, because, you know, Ezra says it wouldn't have worked if Thrawn was there and only with Governor Price. So I thought it was interesting, just because, you know, Ryder's like, they're not going to, like, I can see, like, at that moment of doubt of, like, they're not going to be able to do it because there's even less of them. And, you know, they just lost Kanan still, like, that. I definitely get that. But I will say the fight we had, with Ryder's betrayal was probably the biggest animated fight sequence we've seen. It was a good chunk of the episode was that fight sequence. Everything with Rook and Ezra, the stormtroopers, Price, the gunships, the ghost with Hondo, you know, like everybody was there.
I want a toy version of those gunships. That's what I want, an actual one I'm that I can buy.
We don't. Fire.
I know, but there's gotta be there. But the Rebels don't get that much, the Rebel series didn't get that much love as far as toys, so who knows?
Yeah,
but
sure didn't.
I think it was really, there was a lot of cool stuff they did. Like, there were some scenes of Sabine, like, with her, I forget exactly what it was, but she was, like, flying with her rocket and goes through one of the ships, and it was just, it was so well done. And I know you put on here next the wolves. The wolves were vicious. Like, I thought it was going to get a little more violent, but it's Rebels and it's Disney XD, So of course there's not going to be like limbs flying off or anything, but I almost felt like there could have been because of how those wolves were attacking everybody.
I will say it was a very good ruse of them going back into the fall back into the, you know, the cave, and then all of a sudden, yeah, you know, Ezra's there, and then you see the other eyes. You instantly know that the wolves have come to help.
That is so, so great.
I will say, though, the whole idea of the wolves on Lothal, it just made me smile, because, you know, it's a completely, like, Dave Filoni type thing. And, like, thinking before season four, we're like, I wonder if Ahsoka came back as a wolf, and, you know, that's where she's at. Like, all these ideas and stuff like that. But I do love that the wolves, like, have played such a big part. Even though they're, like, such a new character, they feel like they've always been there, kind of like the Lothal cat and everything like that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I'm happy with... Go, Evan.
Sorry. On the Rebels Recon episode, they made a point of saying that this was, like, the most complex scene that they've ever put together with so many moving parts to it. And I guess I don't even think about that, like, while I'm watching it. And then, like, any director's commentary, they point it out, and you're like, oh my gosh, you're right. This is kind of ridiculous, just how big, how many assets there are in a single scene.
Mm-hmm. So, what did you guys think of, obviously, Hera's other mission while they were, obviously, we're kind of jumping around on this episode because there's so much happened all at once. Hera's other mission to go get the remaining clone troopers. Was that still Fool's Hope or was that Family Reunion? I don't know. I watched all three at once, so I'm trying to remember. Yeah. They all kind of blur together.
I thought it was still
Fool's Hope, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the other part of what was happening. So what did you guys think of Hera's mission to go get the other troopers?
I'm glad we had Hondo back.
Hondo?
I loved having Hondo back. That was my favorite part.
And Melch?
Yeah, and Melch. Oh my god, so good.
I was happy to see Kallus back doing something, because we haven't seen him for a while.
Yeah, we haven't seen Kallus for almost the entire season, but we know he's there. But yeah, I liked having Kallus back. I liked it. I will tell you, having Gregor and Wolf come back as to fight again made me extremely happy.
I got kind of emotional when Gregor said to Gregor, Wolf, you got your wolves back?
Your wolf pack back? Oh, gosh. So I'll tell you this. Like, I didn't cry a lot through the episode. There was tears in my eyes through most of the episode. Like, it was just so good. It was very happy. Like, it was one of those episodes where I had a grin on my face the whole time. Or not one episode, the whole three episodes, I guess you will. I had a grin on my face the whole time. But yeah, seeing, you know, Gregor said, you know, tell Wolf that he has Wolfpack back, and then he's like, they fight like the boys too. It like made me think of Clone Wars, and just so happy with that. Yeah. And then even the epilogue, I know I'm jumping ahead, but like hearing the old man on Endor, you know, officially becoming Rex, saying that, and Rex fought at the Battle of Endor too, and you're just like, yes! That's great. Like, you know, Filoni had said that previously once, but like it just really
confirmed.
It's like confirmed. It makes it. You have them here. It was just fun. It was fun. So let's move on to Family Reunion and Farewell real quick. Just because all these kind of tie together, and I don't want to say like we're focusing on just one episode or anything like that. But Thrawn returns, and he instantly beats our rebels. Instantly. You know, they've been able to go ahead and get back, you know, with the, they go back to the, what is it, the Imperial compound, the sphere, if you will. I don't know what it was called. My mind's drawn a blank.
The dome?
The dome. The dome. They go back to the dome. They use an Imperial protocol because of, you know, Kallus, which was nice that Kallus had, you know, some very specific, you know, knowledge input to have them bring every Imperial back, cleared out the city, and they're going to go ahead and just, like, eject the dome. Eject the Empire out of Lothal, which is awesome. And, of course, Rook survived the battle, you know, from the previous episode. He climbed back up. Rook just doesn't die, except he did, finally.
Well.
He did, finally, in this episode. But he wouldn't go down. He's probably the horror, you know, person. But he comes back, you know, he comes back, and he disables the shield over the city. And you see Thrawn, like, he even says it to the Jedi that, you know, that they don't do things that are calculated, and what's better, they're always taking the moral high ground. And he just starts blasting the city. And so, of course, Ezra just says nope, and he goes into and surrenders to Thrawn. What did you think was going to happen, or how did you feel when Ezra surrendered? Like, to me, I was like, this can't be the end of it. Like, I was really getting, like, emotionally drawn into this at this point. What do you guys think?
You know, I thought that was it. This is the moment we're leading up to. Ezra's going to face Thrawn, and I thought maybe Ezra would not make it out, because I didn't think anybody was going to make it out. But, no, I think it was well done. It was good that none of my expectations were met.
You know, like, I like that. In that way, like, you didn't want to be like, oh, they're going to get right to the Battle of Scarif and I'll die, or...
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Yeah, I'm happy the way... I will say, like, when Ezra surrendered... And and Hera, and everyone starts thinking of, like, plans, and, like, you see the look between Chopper and Sabine that Ezra has. Like, you can see he's grown so much. Like, he accepts the fate. It's something that Kanan taught him. You know, something he learned in the world between worlds, that he couldn't, you know, pull Kanan out and save him, even though he wanted to. And he did one last time through the, vent, because he's the smallest one on the crew of the Ghost. He's the smallest specter, and he went through the air vent. I thought that was really
scene
fun.
Where Sabine lets him go was so well done with the sound,
mm-hmm.
and you could just hear everybody's, like, muffled talking while Sabine's just looking at him take off. That was, like, one of the coolest parts I'd seen on this show, as far as, like, using sound that way.
Mm-hmm.
That was just really impressive.
So when he gets to Thrawn after he's surrendered, there's the temple / portal back into the world between the worlds that the Emperor has put on Thrawn's ship. And Thrawn drops basically Ezra off to talk to this visage of Sheev Palpatine. Not the Emperor. It's definitely Senator-style Clone Wars era, you know, Palpatine before he faces Windu and Anakin.
Yeah, that confused me at first. I was like, wait, what? What is going on here?
I'm wondering, but, like, you know, and actually that's something I wanted to talk about, is how do you think he was doing that? Was it just like a projection? And then the reason why I say, like, was it just a projection, or was it, you know, an actual hologram of the Emperor, but the Emperor was using some type of force ability to use it? And the reason why I ask this is
force
because
projection's possible. And remember,
if it was
Luke
just
did.
A projection, why would it short out when he was angry? So, like,
maybe he lost,
you know,
focus.
Technology, you know, it didn't really just short out. Like, it literally switched between, I'm going to try to seduce you into doing this with your family. And then it changed because maybe he wasn't really worried. My guessing is that it was something along the lines of, you know, like a force walk, or, you know, a projection or something like that.
Yeah, just like Luke did in Last Jedi. He was younger. He was,
yeah,
he showed up to Kylo as the, you know, with the Just for Men beard. And he was, yeah. So, you know,
so just
that,
like Luke in The Last Jedi, you're right, made himself younger, better looking, clean shaven.
There you go. There it is.
Non-disfigured Emperor, or Sheev Palpatine.
I mean, he was definitely much more approachable.
When he was the Senate, right?
Yeah.
Before the Senate was to say, you know, disbanded.
Yeah.
All right.
So what I'm wondering, though, in that scene, are Ezra's parents still alive? Was that maybe another time portal to back when his parents were alive?
And I think, like, I think that's what it was. I think the Emperor had enough of the excavation site of the Jedi Temple from Lothal that he had a doorway. I think he had a doorway. And I think we also had in the World Between Worlds where they said there's more than one doorway into it. So I think the Emperor had a doorway, and, you know, because he even said this was taken from Lothal. So I think he had a doorway, put it on Thrawn's ship. But he needed a Jedi to open it. He needed someone like Ezra to open it, because he couldn't open it. Obviously, he couldn't use it. And you could see, like, him tempting him. He's like, yes, your family can be saved. You know, it's literally like the temptation of, you know, light versus dark right there. You could see the Emperor trying to get his way to get Ezra.
But I love how the Emperor did present himself in the, like, the white robes and like just looking very just regal
very,
and innocent.
Very, I'm a senator from Naboo. I'm not the evil person who is the emperor. Sorry, you don't see my hands moving up doing all my Emperor Palpatine. Anyway, but yeah, I will say I do like this because I was never worried that Ezra would choose his family over what was right, but it was a really interesting positioning because we haven't seen his family except in a photo and a few holos. It's really season one, pretty significantly when he was looking for them. And then he found out from Ryder, I think in season two or at the end of season one, that they were dead. So I will say I was happy to see him make that choice. It did break my heart a little bit to see him have to make that choice to let his family die. But he destroyed the temple, and as the temple came out, oh my gosh, what did you think of those royal, red royal guards with force pikes?
Yeah, I was going to start tweeting about who are these Praetorian-looking blankety-blanks.
They did look very much like the Praetorian guards.
They did, and that's why I was wondering, are they really red royal guards like we had in Return of the Jedi? The reason why is because the Emperor wasn't on the ship. So why would the royal guards be there? Now, we know out of the ashes of the Empire, the First Order rose up. So could these have been an early version of the Praetorian guards that Snoke uses?
Possibly. I mean, they look different. They don't have the same robes. The helmet is very similar. Yeah.
I was wondering if maybe they didn't have the same robes because that would have been a really difficult graphic to pull off.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's true. In the flowing robe and everything. Yeah, so
I guess they've done stuff like that before, but I don't know. It was a very interesting new thing to pop up at that moment.
Yeah, I wonder if we'll get confirmation as to what they are.
Maybe.
Because it's say this, definitely though, a different set of armor.
Yeah, I will say I was surprised that they didn't use Death Troopers in that scene. Just because... did they not use Death Troopers?
Yeah, they didn't. They just had the red guys. We'll just call them the red guys.
And just
some rando stormtroopers who couldn't even hit him when he was floating in air. Come on.
I know, right? Hey, it's hard to shoot with those helmets on. Anyway,
it's true.
But yeah, I'll say this. The reason why I thought it was interesting was just because we've seen Death Troopers a bunch in the series since Rogue One. And when you think about the Death Troopers were kind of like a guard detail for someone like Director Krennic, Grand Admiral Thrawn.
And Thrawn, yep.
Has his own Death Trooper squad, too. So I'm surprised on his capital ship, the Chimera, which I will say, how cool was it to see the Chimera artwork on the bottom of his ship as it was flying through the air? I thought that was really cool. But I was surprised we didn't see any Death Troopers in that scene there. But, oh well. We got Royal Guards or Praetorian Guards. Someone in red, the red guys. But moving on from there, after that happens, obviously he's captured and taken back to Thrawn. And this is when his backup plan has taken place. They've called on, they've broadcast on Channel Zero, a special thing. And jumping out of hyperspace was the Purrgil, the space whales. What'd you guys think about this, when the whales just came through? And just seeing them attack the Empire the way they did.
I thought that was a perfect callback. That was very Ezra to bring animals to help. It was perfect. Yeah, twice. That's just what he does. He's very in tune with the animals of Lothal. And to come back... Well, are Purrgils specific to... They can't be if they can hyperspace travel, right? They're probably all over the place.
They're the ones that actually... Didn't they... There was... I'm trying to remember. Was it Rebels or was it another?
I think it was a different episode of Rebels. It was one of those ones that was like a filler episode. But
well, no, I don't think it was a filler episode. I'm trying to think of it. But weren't they supposed to be the pioneers of hyperspace? If I remember, was that in Rebels or was that in a book or comic?
They had mapped the hyperspace lanes.
They are the ones who started the hyperspace lanes. They naturally were able to navigate the hyperspace lanes, and early explorers followed them. I'm trying to remember if that was in Rebels or a comic or book.
They might have said something akin was it to in that Last in the Jedi episode. Bomber Command?
It might, and this would have definitely been one of the first episode that we saw them in when they got out of there. Okay, yeah, so Hera said that, so Hera basically mentioned it, that like humans were inspired to jump between systems because of the Purrgil.
In their episode. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, so if one of our Patreon listeners has actually said it's from season two, and they just watched the episode a couple days ago, so they know it was Hera. I'm vaguely remembering because I haven't seen it since I rewatched the series, like before season four started, so it's been a while, but I remembered it. But yeah, so obviously the best part with the Purrgils is their plan is succeeding with Ezra there. The Purrgil are there destroying the ships, you know, freeing the blockade. They've restored, you know, there's so much going on. I don't know how to keep track of it all right now so we can get through it, but they've restored the shields, right? At this point, this is where we also had, you know, we got Crazy Gregor, you know, fighting the other stormtroopers, right? And he got shot. He dies. Which I'm sad about, but, you know.
Yeah.
But that's
I mean,
okay.
That was really our only loss, so I guess.
Yeah, that's true.
I know, because, you know, we also got Melch shot, and Hondo did his wonderful epilogue of what he wish he could have done. And then Melch comes back, squealing and all. I love, man, he's what, Hondo is one of my favorite characters. He has been for Hondo a long time, because he's, like, I would love a Hondo-Lando, like, buddy scoundrel, you know, smuggler scoundrel slash pirate movie or TV show, and it would be just be like the best episode ever because, you know, it's Lando and Hondo. And
like, I hope we see more Hondo just forever, basically.
He's a great character, but I think that Melch dying would have been a much more character building experience than, oh, it's okay, he's alive.
He's alive because your buddy Hondo made sure you're okay. Like, I loved it. Like, I love it. Like, Hondo is amazing. But yeah, so I think Melch, right, I agree. If Melch had died, it would have pushed him. It would have made him grow and develop a little bit more in different characters.
Honestly, one of Hondo's lines was one of the first times that I started getting emotional through the many times of these episodes. Right at the beginning, when he said that he would do anything for Ezra, I'm like, who is this? Who is this guy who's just like, I'll do anything for this kid?
Well, Ezra has saved him time and time again. But you don't expect that still. Yeah, but you gotta remember, like, even Vazago and everyone was kind of like, Ezra is unique. Like, he trusted people and believed in people more than everyone else. Like, think about it. Like, even one of the episodes with Hondo and Melch, like, Hera and Kanan said he's got to learn on his own not to trust Hondo. But he still does. And I think Hondo saw that. And, you know, and I think Vizago's like, I kind of wish I had never met you, Ezra Bridger, like, in one of the earlier episodes in the season finale. It was just like, but his life has changed because he met Ezra. So I think it's okay. I think that it's a little bit different, but it's because of Ezra. But as they get the battle that's there in the shield generator room, this is where Zeb and Rook have their battle. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know about you guys, but were you guys worried about Zeb at all in that final bit?
Yeah, definitely.
I will say I was a little worried about Zeb because, again, we didn't really know. We knew Hera survived, so I was never worried about Hera at all in the entire episode because we knew she had survived and Chopper. But with Zeb, he's like, don't wait for me, just do it. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, Zeb, don't do it. Like, I was worried. I'm glad that he jumped and saved himself with Rook, you know, finally dying, because, you know, or is he gone? I don't know.
I think he's pretty confirmed.
He might be crispy or something and come on up. He just keeps coming back. But
he's waiting on the line for him.
With the shield back, the ship's being destroyed by the Purrgils, we have the two Purrgils that grab onto the Chimera and to Ezra holding the back the stormtroopers, grabbing onto Thrawn, and then jumping to hyperspace. What do you guys think is the end? Or first of all, what do you guys think of them jumping to hyperspace, towing the Chimera behind them?
It was ridiculous, but awesome. Like, I didn't see that coming at all, of course. But it was cool. I mean, where did they go? Where the heck could they have gone?
I hope they somehow sealed the busted windows.
Yeah, right.
That the tentacles came through.
You know, it's one of those things. It's like an airlock, right? You know, the tentacles are, you know, vacuum sealed to the edge of them, and it's a TV show, and it's yeah. I'm just gonna say I'm gonna be okay. I know I saw the same thing too. And I'm just like I'm just gonna let that go. But I will say I was not expecting them to tow the Chimera and everything away. I was hoping Ezra would be free, be able to save himself, but obviously he had to go with them. I don't know. Where do you think Ezra and Thrawn went?
The unknown regions.
I would like to think that it was unknown regions, somewhere where the Purgle, you know, we talked about how they jump between systems and they map the hyperspace lanes. Yeah. I would like to think that they're somewhere in the unknown region, and that leads us to Ezra's last message. You know, his last message was one of those things where instantly you had Hera say, map all, you know, known coordinates on, you know, the trajectory they went. And then Chopper plays the message for him, which it was definitely a message of hope, you know, if you will, like talk about what he learned and kind of what was going on.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like you can see he kind of saw, like, he's like, there was many paths. So if you're watching this, it means I had to take a path I didn't want to take that was in front of me, but he had to take it. So I'm okay with it, but it also leads us into the kind of epilogue, if you will. So Sabine has short hair. First of all, what did you guys think when you saw Sabine in that kind of epilogue thing? I was like, oh man, years have passed. You could tell years have passed with the super short haircut. And I think she looked taller, maybe? I don't know. Maybe it's from the angles,
yeah,
or whatever.
I think she was taller.
I think it was just meant to like show that she aged, you know, the couple years. I love that we know that the Empire never came back to Lothal. She talked about the Empire had fractured and, you know, the Rebel Alliance had kind of stepped forward. Because we know at this point, from when last time we saw, you know, Mon Mothma and the other leaders of the Rebel Alliance before Rebels, was one of those things where they were kind of saying it was too soon to do open warfare. And we know what goes on with Rogue One, which they leads to Scarif to stop against the Death Star. You know, it's one of those things where this could have possibly been happening at the same time as, or right before, you know, Scarif, for all we know of. Because I wouldn't be surprised if right after this, Hera went back and, you know, they went to Scarif or something. But yeah, Sabine has short hair, talks about Lothal, how the Empire never came back. We then learn about Kallus and Zeb going to Lirasan. And it is nice to know that the Lasat are still alive. And even though, you know, Kallus had a play in the destruction of the with the disruptors of the Lasat, they're not all gone. So I'm happy about that.
It was kind of funny that they went together.
Yeah, I'm glad that they talked about Lirasan. That was one of the things I said. I'm like, I really want them to talk about Lirasan at some point in this season, you know, in this series, you know, this last season. It was not what it's not completely what I wanted, but it's enough to say, like, okay, it's still there. It hadn't been forgotten, so I'd love to know more about it, because I thought it was such a cool episode when they travel through a unique hyperspace lane, a brand new hyperspace lane, to get to Lirasan. I love that Hera had a child.
Yeah.
And I love that they named him Jason after Jason Solo.
That's right.
I will say this. Yeah, not the real Solo. I will say this. With Jason, my first question was like, he's a mixed species. So not like, and I didn't think about it. I'm like, my wife's like, well, hey, you know, there's mules. Like, you know, it's a donkey and a horse produces a mule. I'm like, okay, yeah, I guess you're right. And I just like, but I'm like, so that means he got green hair because Hera's skin was green. But where's the Leku? Like, that was my quote. My first response was, where's the Leku? But I do like that they named him Jason Syndulla, and we know his father was you know, none other than Kanan. So, you know, he came around sometime after that. I will say this. I saw something really interesting. I'm going to post it here for you guys. So in this shot of we see Jason flying with his mother, in the and I didn't mark it, in the bottom left corner where Jason raises his arms, there's something attached to his belt. It almost looks like a lightsaber.
It does.
So,
it does.
And this is after the Battle of Endor. And here's the thing I love about this, at least for me, thinking is we don't know anything about the temple the Jedi Luke trained. We know that he attempted, and he says Ben destroyed them all, but did he really? And he went off on his own. Like, you know, there's so, again, like, we know, we're looking at little pockets of story in this huge galaxy universe of Star Wars. And seeing Jason, especially if they took him from Jason Solo, who was a Jedi, turned dark. I hope this, you know, Jason Solo doesn't go dark, but I wouldn't be surprised if he wasn't a Jedi, or at least learned to use the Force and a lightsaber. Like, I would love to see more stories with Jason Syndulla, and possibly including Luke, like, the kind of crossing there, because we know Hera and Han have a rivalry of who's the better pilot. So I love that. What do you guys think of Jason Syndulla in general? Just Spectre 7 there.
Well, it depends. If I mean, you kind of already did bring it up. But I didn't know if it would ruin your day if I said, he's probably going to get murdered by Kylo Ren. But maybe not. Maybe not.
Maybe not. Well, you know, if he does, then at least we know what happened to him. And then that also brings up the question, like, what is Hera doing during this whole resistance thing? You know, she's obviously, I had not seen any Twi'leks in the resistance.
Which we see Nine Nub. Yeah, that's kind of weird at this point. I would have expected, and this is a completely different topic, but I would have expected a lot more aliens in the resistance, just like all over the place.
Yeah, when you think about, like, you know, Bothans, we had Bothans in it in Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi. We also have, you know, the Mon Calamari. We have, you know, we have a lot of other aliens, and we've only saw, like, Ackbar's back. We have a couple others.
A lot of humans.
The flight leader of Cobalt Squadron is an alien, but I don't think we've ever seen her on screen.
Elo Asti.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like, I do find it interesting that obviously the Last Jedi. But again, we're seeing things from a very perspective of, like, the First Order, they are very empire-ish, like, so they don't, if they're not human, they're beneath them, right? So we see that. And then you have to remember that Leia is an outsider, considered kind of crazy because she's related to Vader. So I can see it being kind of, you know, I can see in the next one we see more, and that's what I would hope for, just because it's open war now between the First Order and the Resistance, and the Resistance is all that stands between freedom and the galaxy in The Last Jedi. But I would love to see Hera or Jason Syndulla somewhere in those, or at least explored in a comic or movie. And then, of course, the end of the epilogue with Sabine talking about, I used to think it was about me protecting Lethal for Ezra. Not going back to Mandalore, her own family, who she's reconciled with, but to find him. And of course, Ahsoka comes with her to go get her. And I cannot say how excited I was with seeing that at the very end. Ahsoka and Sabine going to go look for Ezra and find him.
So now you can ask a question.
So, if you watched, I think it was in the, this most recent episode of the Star Wars show, where they showed Filoni and the cast viewing the finale with fans, and a fan asked the question is, when are we going to get information about the Ahsoka Sabine TV show? And Filoni's response was, oh, would that be a good TV show? Like, very Filoni coy, like, oh, like,
oh, that was Donald Faison who asked that, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. For
Scrubs, yeah.
Yeah. And so it was one of those things where it was like, oh, would it be a good show? Like, it was very Filoni-esque. When is it going to happen? I would be honest, like, I would love a live action version of it. I think it'd be really cool. I think I would love a cartoon version. The only thing I don't want, and I don't know if you guys would agree with me, is I don't want a Forces of Destiny YouTube-esque short of it. I want either a comic, a book, or a full half-hour TV show or a live-action show. Like, I don't want this story to be... as much as I love Forces of Destiny, mm-hmm. They are literally moments in time. They're short stories. They're like stories
substantial.
They're the stories I would tell my daughter, who is 8 months old, because her attention span is really, really short right now. And I told, and that's okay for her, and that's okay for what these, you know, Forces of Destiny are. But
yeah,
this is a story I would want more substance to. Does that make sense?
The Ahsoka Sabine off on an adventure story is much more epic than anything they would do, like, just on YouTube. I would love to see... I mentioned this to you the other day. I loved it in the Legends books when they would give us a trilogy of books. And we had that in Aftermath, but
it wasn't of the scope. I'll be honest with you. I don't think... I don't want a trilogy. I want a story, like an overreaching story arc, like we got with the New Jedi Order or Legacy of the Force, even with multiple authors tying... Because you think about it this way, like, for those of you who never read Legends, there is authors had written different Star Wars books. One of my favorite authors for the Legends series was Michael A. Stackpole, who did all the X-Wing series. And Aaron Alston, right? So both of those authors were also tapped to do novels inside the New Jedi Order series, which was a big, far-reaching attack on the New Republic. It was like 18 novels. It was ridiculously long.
Yeah.
And it took like 4 years for it to complete. But it was phenomenal. Like, I had a friend who I encouraged him to read it. He went back and read it all in the span of like 3 months. He said, this is such a good story because it's so big. But the best part about it was each novel obviously built upon the story of a whole, but it took the characters that those authors wrote about and really gave you from their perspective. Like, a good example is you had Michael A. Stackpole talk about Corran Horn and Wedge Antilles a lot, where he still pushed the story of Luke and Jason and Jaina all through. I would love to see something with Ahsoka and Sabine, Lando and Hondo, and, you know, and the rest of the crew of the Ghost, like, all in different novels, kind of going through this hunt for Ezra / where did Thrawn end up, and tie into, like, what's the Empire doing with it too, like, from a completely different perspective, like, and just see the whole thing go through a series of like 6 or 7 novels. I will say that Disney or Lucasfilm now with the Lucasfilm Story Group, keeping everything continuity together is going to be a little bit more difficult than just a story approval than what they used to do. But I would love to have something a little bit more epic, a little bit more full, just because, like, the trilogy from Aftermath was good, but it didn't have the same scope of what I loved and remembered from the Legacy series, which I know a lot of fans still had too. Would you agree, Evan, or no?
It's tough to say, like, because NJO was so big, there were highlights, and then there were a lot of lowlights. But with something like Legacy of the Force, which I liked that one on the whole, that was only 9 books long, but then you had Troy Denning in there, so with that kind of ruined parts of it, I would be extremely happy to have something the length of X-Wing. Okay. Which was
5 books?
It was... the first arc was 4. So it was a 4-book arc of Rogue Squadron, then I think 4 or 5 of Wraith Squadron, and then a book at the end that tied them
Mercy
all,
Kill.
And we're not going to count Mercy Kill. From what I hear, we shouldn't count Mercy Kill.
I read Mercy Kill. I just remember Piggy. That's all I remember from those.
Exactly. That's all there is to remember about that one.
Piggy.
Yeah, if we got... Okay. 9 books. Give us 9 books. Give us 3 good authors who alternate. So Claudia Gray. Oh, here we go. Claudia Gray, Christy Golden, and not Troy Denning. perfect.
Timothy Zahn, there we go.
Sure.
Yeah, like,
get Mike Stackpole back too. While we're at it,
heck, I would.
E.K. Johnston.
I'd be okay. I'd even be okay with Kevin J. Anderson to come back. Like, I don't know if you remember him from.
I thought Jedi Academy trilogy was fine. I know there's a lot of people who would tie me to a truck for that, but I thought it was just fine. But I would love to see now. Thanks to that same patron shouting out E.K. Johnston in the chat. Yes, absolutely, 100%. E.K. Johnston, Christy Golden, and Claudia Gray. That's it. That's what we need right there. For Ahsoka and Sabine, absolutely.
Yeah, I'll take that. I would agree. So I would love to see a live action or a continuation story with them. And I think that's the best part about Rebels, is we finally got an ending where it actually ended, but it left it open for so much more. Like, everyone's just like, wait, what else is going on? Like, there's more. I know there's more. But it's not this story. So I'm okay with the story ending, but you know you want more. It's kind of like, I know where episode 9 is going to end, and it's going to finish that trilogy out, but you know there's more story, and you're going to want more story, which I know they're going to give us more. So I'm happy with it. All right, guys. Anything else about the series finale of Star Wars Rebels?
I'm going to watch it again real soon.
I know. I'm probably going to rewatch the whole series all over again, just because I will say this. I'm probably going to go back and rewatch all of Clone Wars, or at least certain episodes, like the Mortis episodes again.
Yeah.
And then rewatch all of Rebels.
I've got a friend right now who's getting through Clone Wars for the first time. And so she's letting me know where she is, and she just finished Mortis. And I'm just like, I can't tell you anything that's happening right now yet.
But it's so good. Like, it makes sense. Yeah, it really is one of those things that I'm happy with. Anyway, thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/Resistance Radio Podcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/Resistance Radio Podcast. And for our 100th episode that we will be releasing next week, make sure you enter the giveaway. And tweet at us your favorite moments over these last 99 episodes. If we use yours on the show, you may be getting a free t-shirt or button pack. As always, I am Mikey B.
I'm Evan.
I'm Dano.
And may the Force be with you.
And also with you.